If I can have your attention, ladies and gentlemen, I first want to say that with us today are all of the officers and members of our International Executive Board, and I'm very happy to be able to announce that at our meeting this morning, Leonard Woodcock was elected by acclamation. We have a united union, we have a united leadership, and I'm confident that under the leadership of Leonard Woodcock as president of our organization, that we'll be able to move forward aggressively and effectively and meeting the challenges of our time. I'm now very proud to present to you the new president of our union, Leonard Woodcock.
Thank you very much, Emil Mazie, and ladies and gentlemen. I've been asked many times in the past, but increasingly in these last few days, as to why is the UAW different? Well, I think certainly the behavior of this organization and its leadership in this past week has shown in dramatic form that we are indeed different. There was no power struggle in this union. There was a sharp contest. It involved two men who are close personal friends and who emerged from that contest, it having been resolved, still close personal friends. I would like to say publicly that the Secretary Treasurer of this union, with whom I have had an association going back to the summer months of 1936, and who has made many great contributions to our union, made his greatest contribution by the skilled and magnificent way in which he handled the resolution in these past few days. And I would like to say to Douglas Fraser, I was proud of him. And he showed his greatness by the gracious and graceful way in which he told the world that the matter was resolved and that Leonard Woodcock would be the successor president to Walter Reuther. Now, our loss is irreparable. Walter Reuther was a labor leader beyond compare. He was a man without parallel. When I became, in the month of December of 1955, the director of the General Motors Corporation, I had reached the height of my ambition in this union. It had been my intention, if I still should have been here, in 1974, when Walter would have left, that I too would have left, so that a new leadership team at that time could be put properly together. It is not that we have a monolithic organization. We do not, but we resolve our differences in a civilized fashion. I just came back from having the privilege being introduced by Ken Bannon to the Ford Council delegates. And their reception and their response was magnificent indeed. I think I can say without being boastful that we have a great leadership in this union, but we have to have a great leadership to be worthy of the great membership that we have. Now, there has been speculation that the direction of this union will change. Doug Fraser made that clear yesterday. That is not true. The commitment of this union to the outside societal problems and their correction was not simply a personal commitment of Walter Reuther, although on that he had a deep personal commitment. It was a collective commitment of the leadership and, for the overwhelming part, the membership. On the simple question of the unity of black and white workers, if we had not founded this union on that basic principle, not simply because it was right, but because it was practically necessary for this kind of organization, we would never have survived our founding days. To try and signal to the world that the direction has not been changed, I, together with other members of our leadership group, with Vice President Jack Edwards, Regional Director Marcellius Ivory, Regional Director E.T. Michael, and staff representatives Irving Bluestone, E.J. Moran, and myself will join in Atlanta, Georgia, the March Against Repression, headed by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I will be there as the newly elected president of this union. I will be there first in Walter's stead because Walter Reuther would have been there. But I will also be there to signify that our alliance with the progressive institutions in this country, such as the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, devoted to the solution of the problems besetting this nation, to signify that that is not only not changed, but because of the tragic loss we have had, our determination is doubly dedicated to that sort of activity. Let me also say that there has been speculation that the loss of Walter Reuther will significantly weaken our ability to carry forward the collective bargaining program of this union. Well, here again, Walter made a contribution that was beyond measure. It was not true that he used to just show up on day one and then only come back when all the work was done. That was not true. In those last critical days, he was an active participant. He was himself a solver of problems. I have many memories of that. I know that Doug Fraser does. I know Ken Bannon does. And obviously, that is a great loss. But here again, we were a collective group, and we will have a greater determination than we might otherwise have had. The automobile industry is saying that we have a grave inflation problem in this country, and indeed we do. That inflation problem is not caused, as the propaganda campaign is trying to insist, by labor's present benefits or labor's demands. What C.E. Wilson said in 1949 and in 1950 in defense of the General Motors contract of 1948, it is not wages that push up prices, it is prices that pull up wages, is as true in 1970 as it was in 1949 and 1950. Now, we have in the automobile industry made many great pioneering innovations. But the fact of the matter is that those innovations have been implemented more generously in the agricultural implement industry with this union than they now presently are in the automobile industry. When I was elected as the vice president of this union in April of 1955, I had the distinction to be appointed the director of the Agricultural Implement Department. And as such, I was involved in several turbulent months of collective bargaining through the summer and fall of that year. I was heavily involved with Pat Greathouse, and Doug Fraser was then in the president's office. I called for his assistance, which was readily given. But our campaign in the summer of 1955 in the agricultural implement industry was to catch up to the automobile industry. And skilled trades rates, we were 10 cents an hour behind. We didn't have the union shop. We didn't have many, many things that the automobile workers were enjoying in the automobile contracts. But that was 1955. In this year of 1970, there are benefits that the agricultural implement workers, members of this union, enjoy that the workers, members of this union, do not enjoy in General Motors and in Ford and in Chrysler. With regard to vacation pay, for example, they have all of the benefits that we have on regular vacation and casual days off, but for 20-year employees, they have an additional week of vacation. They have a Christmas shutdown that begins the day before Christmas Day and ends the day after New Year's Day. And for every one of those working days, they get full pay. They have a vacation bonus, which we do not have, of $100. It is paid $75 when the individual takes his vacation and $25 when the individual has his Christmas shutdown. Their overtime is voluntary. They do not have the involuntary servitude beyond 8 hours that we suffer with in the big three, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. They do not have a waiting week under the subplan. When the worker gets laid off, he is immediately entitled to sub-benefits. And they have an income continuation plan on unemployment. In the case of Caterpillar, for example, an employee with 1 year of service up to 3 years gets his full pay for 3 weeks, full pay without deductions. If that employee has but less than 10 years of service, he gets 5 weeks of full pay. And if he has 10 years of service, he gets 7 weeks of full pay before he begins his SUB benefits. Now, the agricultural implement industry is a less profitable industry long run than is in the automobile industry, and they are direct competitors of the General Motors Corporation and the Ford Motor Company in particular. And it seems to me that we are entitled to say that the workers in the automobile industry are entitled to get the same treatment from General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler in their more profitable condition long run as the members of our union who are employees in the agricultural implement industry. We have a united union. That slogan that we have of teamwork in the leadership and solidarity in the ranks is not just words on paper, it is something with depth and with meaning, and we have shown that in this week, and we will show it in the weeks and the months ahead. And we are determined to win a contract settlement that will get equity for our members, and of which Walter Reuther, too, would have been proud. Well, the early days of this week, Doug kept me kind of busy. I wasn't thinking about some of these problems. I'm only now just beginning to think of them. We have not made those determinations. We have a regular board meeting, which will meet the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th of June in Black Lake. At that time, I'll have the chance to talk individually and collectively to all the members of the board, and we'll begin to make those decisions. I know it has been suggested to me it might be wise that I stay with the General Motors assignment through the negotiations, but we have not yet made that decision.
Where are you going to Atlanta?
I'm going there tonight, and we'll be there during the end of the march tomorrow and at the meeting that they will hold, hopefully, at 1:30 in the afternoon.
March ends tomorrow, Leonard?
The march ends tomorrow, yes, sir.
You speak out as vigorously against the war as the late Mr. Luther did.
Well, one of the things I said to our executive board when I thanked Emil Mazie for his contribution, I said he can rest assured that since at an early period I was so wrong on the war and he was so right, and that I had a late conversion to my present views of the disaster that war is to this nation, that I will pay most careful attention to his opinions. And I can assure you all of us are united in the absolute belief that the United States has got to disentangle itself from the morass in Indochina, has got to disassociate itself from the invasion against Cambodia, because we cannot accept the mathematical principle that you get out by getting in more. One of the wonderful things about this past week has been that no one, no single individual came to me, and I'm sure the same was true about Doug, to say, well, I'll do this if you do that, or I might do this if you might do that. That was totally absent. There are no agreements to the future. And certainly, we have learned only too tragically that one cannot be certain of the future.
Is it your intention to serve as a retirement year?
Well, let me say, I am today a candidate for re-election in 1972.
Would you nominate him?
He gives me the privilege of it. I nominated him today.
That's true.
Do you think the press might go up to Black Lake for the board meeting?
I understand, I was informed today that Walter had commitments to the press for a pre-dedication preview. I have only just become aware of it. I have become critically aware of the importance of the press to us, and we will find ways of keeping that promise. I unfortunately cannot indicate a date at this point, because we have yet another building trade strike in northern Michigan.
The enemies of organized labor say that this change in the leadership will have a harmful effect on the Alliance for Labor Action.
We don't anticipate that. In these last several months, we've developed good relationships with the leaders of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, and the Alliance has not moved as quickly as we would have hoped, and because the people involved in its leadership are so busy with their own affairs. But it's our determination, and I'm sure it is their determination, to press forward vigorously with the objectives of the ALA.
Mr. Woodcock, will you be bargaining this September as though you were a candidate for re-election with that in mind?
I beg your pardon.
Will you be bargaining, looking at the bargaining table as eyeing your candidacy for re-election, asking for big things from the automakers?
We will all of us be bargaining this September with the utmost vigor to do the best possible job for our membership, regardless of any political consequences.
Mr. Woodcock, was there any discussion by the board today on a possible replacement for you as vice president?
The matter was discussed, and it was unanimously agreed we should defer the matter to afford, among other things, myself an opportunity to discuss with individual members their points of view. Many had not reached any kind of conclusion because they first wanted to know who would be the president, and in turn it's affected by what assignments, national assignments, we may have in mind, and there's a whole host of interrelated matters that go to this question, and for that reason we are temporarily deferring it.
Mr. Woodcock, does the union plan any action in the Fisher 2 changeover employee?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
Does the union plan any action in the Fisher 2 changeover employee?
We have presently agreed with the General Motors Corporation, after they made final their determination to turn that Chevrolet and Fisher twin assembly plant into a truck operation, without abandoning our right to continue two separate local unions, we are now engaged in discussions with them at the international union level, both regional and national department, to get answers to certain questions as to the melding of the seniority lists and other things, so that we can make on our side a firm conclusion as to what our posture will be.
Woodcock, do you plan a special convention of the, or does the board plan a special convention of the union to confirm?
A special convention, but there's no present decision to have one. In any event, under our Constitution, we could not have one for at least 60 days.
Mr. Woodcock, yesterday Mr. Fraser said that when you take over, there'd be a change in style, but not a change in content. What do you think you meant by that?
Well, obviously I'm not Walter Reuther, and my whole lifestyle is different. I can't possibly say, I can say I don't smoke, but that's as far as I can go. So I think inevitably there will be other changes that will develop naturally. I do not have an aversion to scotch, but I also have in that particular a Catholic taste. I might say I have been passed of a note to remind me that it is also my intention to go this afternoon. First time I've ever done it, to any kind of a stockholders meeting. It is my purpose to go to the General Motors stockholders meeting so that we can take the huge holdings of the UAW. There are 7 shares. I'm going to take 3, Olga McGuire is going to take 2, and Nat Weinberg is going to take 2. And I will second the motion that will be put on the floor to create within the General Motors structure a temporary committee on corporate responsibility. I don't think I'll have as much luck in that election as I had this morning. But I seriously believe the value of the Public Review Board to this organization, to keeping it clean and free from corruption and democratic, that the offices of the General Motors Corporation are no more immune to making mistakes than are the officers of this union, and they have far greater power, and their impact upon the national and international scene is much, much greater. And we think that that committee, if it could be brought into being, would serve a most useful purpose.
The Wall Street Journal said this morning that your friends call you the Undertaker.
That's a canard that was established in the 1947 convention, because I used to be the scorekeeper for our faction. And it was my job in consultation with the rest of us active then in the factional days of our union to know where the delegates were. And in 1947, of course, we had overwhelming support. Everybody was getting elected. I wasn't used to that sort of thing. And I kept cautioning Walter, well, now, wait a minute. They say they've got 300 out of 390 delegates locked up. I'm not so sure. And it was at one of those parties that we have after the elections are over that Walter took note of this and then called me the Undertaker. Nobody has called me the Undertaker since, at least to my face.
You got to wrap it up here, Steve.
Doug pointed out we might now be able to go to the bar and have a drink with the president.
Well, it all depends who pays. Well, let me say, gentlemen, ladies, I'm most grateful for this opportunity. I know that I will have the full support of my colleagues. We do have united ranks, a united membership, a great membership, and we will give our level best to make this union continue as a lasting and great tribute to Walter Reuther. Thank you very much.
Shaking hands.